I think we'll just start, okay? Because we're kind of running late, which is very unusual. Christine, you went to a restaurant, and well, we had to go to 2 or 3 because they were all closed, and then we couldn't find the waiter. And finally, we dragged him out of the kitchen, and then he said, "We're not open yet," and he said, "You're a cook," and then at the end of the dinner, we were like rushing him. He said, "Jesse Michael, you don't have to rush. I went to one of your classes. You always have to know." Okay. Busted. Okay. Who's going to read?
Anyone who really wants to quickly reach some shelter for themselves and every other being must exchange themselves and others. Must carry out the very highest of every secret practice.
So, Master Shantideva, all he says is that if you really want to help people, you should carry out the highest secret practice. But he doesn't mention what that practice is. Okay? And then every commentary has comment on it, and we're using Prakashakanamati's commentary, the oldest commentary. And what it says is, the highest secret practice here is exchanging yourself with others. Okay? So now we're already on to exchanging yourself and others, like switching places. What do you call it in English? You say, I'll put myself in your shoes. I'll put myself in your place. I'll put myself in your shoes. You say that in English. And those of you who were in the afternoon breakout groups, you saw the great switch that he did. Right, and I'm just going to repeat it because it's so beautiful. I heard Christina do it in her class. And it comes like this, you know, you keep telling this guy that he should treat other people the way he treats himself. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Separate but equal. Okay? Dakshan nyampa. But not jepa yet. Okay? And then the other guy gets overwhelmed. He says, look, I just can't handle it. You know, like if I had to switch places with Eric, I could switch with Ellie and Lynette maybe, you know, like, I could switch with 2 people, looking at Geshe Michael, wishing he would take the break already, you know, like, I could do that. But now you say I have to take care of everybody in the room, equal to myself. I have to worry about everybody in this room, equal to myself. It's just too much. It's just too much for me to do. And then there's this point in the reading you had in the afternoon, and Master Shantideva says, you know what? It's too much to do. You know? It's impossible. Like, you can't take care of everybody the way you take care of yourself. You just can't. There's too many people to take care of everybody else the way you take care of yourself. So I have an idea. Let's just change yourself. Okay? Like, instead of fighting this tendency to cherish yourself instead of cherishing other people, you keep that tendency. That's fine. You just watch out for number one. Forget about other people. Okay? He changes his whole story. Like halfway through the chapter, he says, you know what? There's so many people to worry about. Let's just drop it. You know? Go ahead. Take care of number one. Forget the other people. But, then there's a but, right? This is in contracts I used to do in business. It's always a but. But, you have to kind of wrap your idea of me around everybody else, okay? All right. And then you just, you know, and then you just move on, okay? So you're now, instead of separate but equal, it's just me. You just take care of me. And it's a two-step process. It's a two-step dance, okay? First, try to treat other people as you would have them treat you, or as you would treat yourself. But then he does Jesus one better, right? Then he says, you know what? It's just really hard. Just take care of yourself. But wrap me around the other people in this room. And then the guy, you know, he's going to say, I can't do that. You know, I'm not somebody else. And, you know, I stop at my skin. Yeah, so if you have a child, your me doesn't extend to them, you see? If you buy a new car, your me doesn't extend to your new car. If someone scratches your car instead of everybody else's car, you don't get upset. You see? And he's saying, you define your me. Do you have a 401k? Do you have a 401k? The guy says, Yeah, I have a 401k. I have a retirement fund. Well, why? It's not going to help you. You know, like you're 62. You're not going to get that money back now. It's not like the guy at 62 is going to send the guy at 40 the money. Okay? He's separate. But in your mind, you extend yourself to him. And even this afternoon, right? Like in the morning, you eat breakfast. Why? So the guy in the afternoon won't be hungry. But that hunger doesn't affect you in the morning. It doesn't touch you. You're untouchable in the morning by the guy in the afternoon. So why are you taking care of him? Because I extended my idea of me to the afternoon. Oh, well, so extend it to Ellie. Extend it to the man. You know, then just watch out for number one. It's a lot easier than trying to treat everybody else the way you treat yourself. Okay, got it? It's really sexy. And, you know, it sounds funny. It sounds like, oh, you know, it's just a semantics. But it's not like that. Try it. I'll tell you the difference. Me and Christy go into the ice cream store, you know? And then I say, I want mint chocolate chip with lots of fat in it and milk, you know? And then she's like, I would like the sherbet, you know? You know? And then, you know, if I make sure she gets her ice cream, right? That's dakshen nyampa, okay? That's treating me and the other person equally, separate but equal. She gets her sherbet, I get my chocolate milk. Okay? Like that. That's separate but equal. Now, when you're doing the new thing, dakshen jepa, switching myself and others, you're like, we would like a cup with one scoop of chocolate mint and one scoop of sherbet. And then we eat it together. Because we are one. You see? And that's a very nice practice. And later, if you want to try that, we do that actually with everything. It's hard sometimes. But it's a good practice. Just now it's not separate but equal anymore. You see? It's we would like one cup of ice cream. Okay? Got it? And I'm still watching out for me. Just that me has two stomachs now. And me has two separate tastes now. But I take care of me. You see? So it's a lot easier than struggling to take care of other people. So instead of thinking of other people as other, you think of them as you, and you just take care of yourself. Okay? Alright? It's very interesting. It's very profound. Maybe this could change the whole world. You see? It's a very interesting thing. You see? So we have three choices. Ignore other people, which is what we always do. Or, separate but equal, you know, make sure everybody gets ice cream, what they like. Or, order one cup of ice cream with anything in it, and we all eat it together. You see what I mean? And we're all just one person. You see? That's kind of cool. By the way, as part of the switching thing, like I'm you, you're me, we're going to be doing that in a while, I think next weekend. Okay, and that's a heavy meditation. That's like, it's when I say exchange self and other, and you hear it in the announcement or on the postcard or something, I said, you have to switch places with other people. Now you're sitting looking at Geshe Michael, and you're wondering if he's going to go over tonight. You see what I mean? So then, if I'm switched myself with you, I won't go over tonight. You see what I mean? Like that. Okay? But there's going to be a dark side switching too. Okay? There's going to be a dark side switching. And those of you who've studied it already, like I switch, like usually I'm jealous of somebody who's better than, like Nanette can dance better than me, okay? And so I would normally be jealous of her. So there's this practice where I put my mind in her body, and now I look at Geshe Michael, and I practice being jealous. I practice being jealous. And I say, yeah, yeah, he gets to stand up there, I don't get to stand up there. Yeah, yeah, he knows the better. I don't know the better. You know, and you practice being jealous. You practice how you really think, usually. And it's kind of depressing, because it's so easy to do. Because it's what we do, you know? And then there's this big debate, but I'm not going to cover that, because that's covered in the next Saturday. So I have to cover my own stuff, because the teachers are getting mad. Okay. I can't switch. Okay. This last verse, the first verse that we read, it said, this is the highest secret practice. And there's this big debate in the scriptures. He said, what secret practice? This practice of making me you. Okay. And then the question comes up, what? What would you guess? Is this tantra? Why is it secret? I mean, this is open book. This is not secret teaching. This is an old open teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Open, tantra means you can't tell anybody that teaching. This is called sutra teaching. Sutra means you should tell everybody this teaching. So why does he call it a secret practice? And then Master Prajnakarmati, Naropa Sidekick, he gives the answer. He says, look, first of all, it will scare people. It will make people uncomfortable.
Okay.
I expect you to put yourself in Krishna's body, and every time you go to 31 flavors of the third, you have to eat sugar. You know, and there's a certain number of people who just say, huh? You know, why should I do that? You know, I mean, that's noble and everything, but, you know, okay? So first of all, it might turn people, they might get like nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I have to put myself in that Iraqi person's body. Well, that means I'd have to go out and actually, you know, really work against that war instead of just complaining about it. You know what I mean? Like I might even have to go to jail or something to try to stop it. Or something like that, you see? And then you get nervous. You say, well, I'd rather stop with the person next to me that I kind of like. And we, you know what I mean? You don't really want to switch it. So Master Prajnakarmati says, first of all, we keep it a little quiet because it would freak some people out. Secondly, people might disrespect it. It's a very holy idea. It's a sacred idea. And then we believe that if a person disrespects a very important spiritual idea, that's very bad karma for them. So a lot of times we don't tell people secret things that happen to us if they don't believe you. You see, if they won't believe you and they might disrespect you, then you keep it secret, you keep it quiet.
Okay.
Then they don't get in trouble. It's not that you didn't have some amazing thing happen to you. It's not that it's not true. It's not that it wouldn't help them if they believed it. But if you know they wouldn't believe it, and if you know they would just disrespect it, then you don't advertise what has happened to you. For example, that's a custom. It's a custom in a lot of places. We memorized part of the Hatha Yoga Pradipika. This is the second most famous yoga book. After what? Yoga Sutra. Yeah. Actually, we're going to do it after we do the Yoga Sutra. So we'll be like, it's going to be a while. That's a longer book. And that book is interesting because it has the yoga exercises in it. Then it goes into the pranayama and the cleansing exercises. Then it goes into emptiness in the last chapter. Very beautiful text. But I'm going to quote a verse from the first chapter. This is almost at the beginning of the book. And I just love this verse, okay? It says, Haktavidya parangopya yogina sadini chatta pavedhiri, which means, Haktavidya parangopya means, we keep our yoga practice secret. Yogina sadini chitta. If a yogi or a yogini wants to succeed at yoga, you have to keep it secret. Bhavibhiryavate putta. If you keep it secret, it'll have power. Nirviyatu prakashita. But if you show it off, it'll lose its power. So that's like, it doesn't mean just you shouldn't do yoga exercises in front of people. It doesn't mean that. It means whatever your practices or your attainments, you don't advertise it. You don't advertise it. And unless you specifically want to help somebody, you don't like advertise what you're doing and things like that. If you think they would like to know, you tell them. But if you think they might disrespect it, you don't tell them. Because if they disrespect it, it's a very bad karma. We say bad karma can make you go to hell, okay? If someone disrespected a holy practice that you do. So that's one big reason why tantra is secret. That's one big reason why we don't talk about it by tradition. The word tantra means secret. Sangha into them. And we don't tell people about it because they might not respect it. They might think it was weird or something like that. And then they make very bad karma for themselves. I'll give you another one. I'll show off. We studied Greek this summer. New Testament. Jesus. He said, where is that? Horate medes kenos keto. Say, this is cool. Horate. Medes. Kinoskito.
Kinoskito.
Don't tell to me. Okay? It is Matthew 9:30. Okay? Don't tell anybody. When did he say that? Do you know? Sorry? Right after he cured it to have some blind people. He cured some blind people by just touching them, and he cured their blindness. And then he says, don't tell anybody anymore. Like, and he's often saying that, you see? And it's the same idea. It's more powerful. Beauty of bhakti is more powerful if you don't advertise it. Okay? Except in special cases. Right? Unless you know the person that's listening has a lot of faith. A lot of times Jesus says, what's the Pisturesa Tutta? Do you believe? You know? Somebody says, do me a miracle. He says, Pisturesa Tutta? Do you really believe? Because it's the belief that makes it happen. It's that karma that makes it happen. So he's always asking somebody. He says, okay, I'll do a miracle, but Pisturesa, do you believe? You know? And then he does the miracle. If they believe. The people that didn't believe aren't in the Bible. They didn't get in there. Okay. Next verse. Who's up?
This body that I'm so attached to makes me afraid even of things that are not very frightening. Since the body is then what threatens us, who wouldn't hate it like a foe?
Here he's getting into the problems that are caused by watching out for number one. Say wrong. Tenzin. Wrong Tenzin. Wrong Tenzin means to watch out for number one. Wrong means me. Tenzin means to cherish yourself. Just to like yourself, cherish yourself, okay? And it's to watch out just for yourself. And he's going to start going through all the problems that it causes. And one, he says, look, what's the definition of an enemy? How would you define an enemy? Yeah, well, he's done anything that keeps you from reaching enlightenment. But I mean just in general, in the world. Like if I went to the Republican Convention and then said, what defines an enemy? Yeah, somebody wants to hurt you, and someone you're scared of, therefore. Okay? Someone that you're scared of because they want to hurt you. Okay? That's what an enemy is. So he says, look, you walk around the desert in Arizona somewhere, and you see a snake, rattlesnake, and they're like up in there, you know? And then you get scared. And he says, why do you get scared? Why do you get scared? He might bite you and hurt your body. You see? So you have this attachment to your body. Therefore, you're afraid of the snake. Get it? Okay? You're afraid of the snake because you're attached to the body. If he bites my body, I'll have to go to the hospital. It's like an hour away. You get the snake or something. You know, like, it's going to be a problem. We had one of the 3-year retreats to this trip, right? And, you know, so because you're attached to your body, you're afraid of the snake. So, if you think about it, the snake is making you afraid. We can call the snake source of fear, number one. But it's the body that makes you afraid of the snake. So we should consider the body the source of all those fears. You see? It's the attachment to the body and the body itself which creates fear. Now, if the definition of an enemy is someone that scares you, then who's the real enemy? You see, your own body. Get it? It's kind of cool. He's a debater, right? He gets you there. He says, what's the, how do you define, he says, this is how you do it in the monastery. You just wander into the debate ground. It's like, oh yeah, what's an enemy? So somebody gets you scared. Oh yeah. So do snakes scare you? Yeah, they scare me, yeah. Oh yeah, because you're attached to your body, right? Yeah. And you're afraid that they hurt your body, right? Yeah. So really it's your body that's causing all those things you're scared of, right? Yeah. So it's his body that's really scaring you, right? Yeah. So your body's your enemy, right? You see? And then the guy's like, no. And then, you see, that's what you do in the monastery. You're like, just, oh, yeah. And then you hit him with checkmate, you know? No, and then he has to say, yeah, my body's my enemy. And you're trying to take care of it. You wash it every day. You know, later he says, people say, look, I can't keep track of all the other people in my life that I'm supposed to be making happy. It's too many. It's too many people. I can't take care of all your needs at once. I can't do it. says, yeah, you can. You already take care of a lot of people. No, I don't. Yeah, you do. You take care of every part of your body. You clip your fingernails. You clip your toenails. You watch out for your hair. You know, you brush your teeth. You wear a shirt. Then you take care of the bottom part. Then you put on socks. Then you go out and get shoes. Then you feed the belly. Then if there's some kind of problem, then you take x-ray, right? There's so many parts. You don't even think about it anymore. You're watching thousands of parts. You're taking care of thousands of parts. So just add a few more. What's the big deal? You know, no, you're already, you don't think of it that way. You're taking care of your right ear. You're taking care of your left ear. You're taking care of your nose. You're taking care of each nostril, especially if you're a yogi. You know, and no, stuff like that. There's just no more. You already got 100 people on this list that you take care of. Nose, you know, tongue, teeth, heart, you know, liver, stomach, especially stomach. You know, no, you got all these things. Just to add a few more on the list. What's the big deal? Okay? So anyway, that's the deal about your body. The body is just, it's your body. You shouldn't be attached to yourself. This body is like, anyway, it's a lost cause. There's a joke in Tibetan, you started dying when you were born. You start dying when you were born. The body's just gonna let you down. Now the homework says, in what sense is the body not the enemy? Those of you who were at the Yoga Sutra, chin on top of it for a bit. Look. Look. Yeah, use, it's a secret teaching. It's tantra. Use the outer methods and the inner methods. What's the outer method? Oh, inner method is meditation and study. Svadhyaya. Right? What's the inner method? Sorry, outer method. Do yoga. Do the asanas. Okay? You can reach your mind through your body. Because the body has inside of it these channels, special channels, and prana, wind moving through the body. Your thoughts are tied to that prana. Okay? When you're happy, prana is moving in the central channel. When you're angry, prana is moving in the right-hand channel. When you want to donate and somebody else is getting the last word, that desire is moving through the left-hand channel. And the channels, the side channels twist around the main channel here, and they choke it. So, you know, getting angry is not just bad, it's preventing you from having nice thoughts. You see, you can't have both at the same time. Because all the prana rushes over to the right side, and you can't get it into the middle anymore. See what I mean? Then if you fill out the middle, you can't get angry anymore. See what I mean? So there's only so much prana. You can only have one of them running at a time, basically. Like that. So, in that sense, if you know the secrets of yoga, how to like affect the right hand channel, when you do a left twist, seated left twist, Matsyendra or Marichyasana, either one, when you do a twist to the left, you're stretching and making healthy the right hand channel, and you'd be less likely to get angry after class. And that's why you feel some kind of euphoria after class, after yoga. It doesn't last, okay? It doesn't last. You get in a traffic jam, anger starts, prana begins moving again in this channel. But right after a yoga class, for maybe half an hour, you feel just friendly, happy towards other people. If you have a good teacher, if they teach you the right thing. Why? Because you've used the body to reach the heart. See? You can reach the heart from the inside. By studying these books, you can reach the heart from the inside by meditating. But yoga was designed in ancient times to reach your heart from just your dumb, stupid, gross body. You know, turn this elephant to the left, and prana will move through the channel more gracefully, and you won't get angry for a while, okay? And that's what yoga was for. So let me ask you, should you use the outer method or the inner method? Should you? Oh, this is wrong. Okay, I tried to do a diamond dealer thing on you. But that's good. Yeah, use both. Chindang tapasoda. Use both. Go to yoga class or whatever. Okay, ballet, tai chi, anything. Yoga was designed for that. Now, ballet may have been, that's secret. Anyway, when you turn to the left, you're opening this channel. So in this case, it's the body you're in. No, you can say the body is a temple, the body is a vehicle, the body is like a very useful tool. I can't do yoga without a good body. I need a body. It'll help me. You know, if I understand how the body works, I can use it to reach my enlightenment. So, you have to get this idea about your body. You can relate to your body as a lot of trouble, and that's true, and you shouldn't be attached to the body in that way. But, you can use it for very important spiritual needs. I made a joke in Yoga Sutra class. I said, when I went to church when I was a kid, or when you went to synagogue when you were a kid, they didn't say, Johnny, come up to the front, to the altar. Do 20 push-ups. Why? It's going to make you more spiritual. You see, we don't have this idea in America. But the great thing, yoga, that great teaching, it's secret. In the monastery, you don't learn it for 20 years. You know? They say you can affect your heart if you know the ways of affecting your channels. And in that case, the body is a very great opportunity, holy thing. So, you have to see it both ways, okay? And I think it's good especially for people who are body-oriented. Like if you were just born, like you love to move your body, you love to dance and things like that, then you can use that as a method. You don't like to have to, what do you call it? You don't have to deny those urges to use your body. You can use your body as your spiritual practice. And then you'll get the same result as people who are more attracted to meditation, for example. Okay? All right. Next verse. Who's on?
Let's get somebody.
Curly, right? Give me a verse.
With another day to find the technique of curing those illnesses of the body, hunger and thirst and the rest. To do so, we slaughter birds and fish, the wild beasts, and the forest too. We lay in wait at crossroads.
She's Canadian. Okay. How old were you when you did the debate? How old was she? When she was 7, we did a debate in Central Park. There were like 2,000 people there. And she beat me. But that's another story. Okay. This verse says, this is about all the trouble that wanting to take care of number one gets you into. Okay? Like, if you're too concerned about your body. And, he calls it, you have sicknesses. Is it dosha in Sanskrit here? It is dosha? I don't know. It's called sickness in Tibetan. It means hunger and thirst and a need for clothing. These are like sicknesses. And you're running around all day long trying to treat the patient. Who's the patient? Your stomach. It's handcuffs. It's chains on you. Your stomach. It's like demanding another meal. I just fed you half an hour ago. Yeah, I want some more. So can you wait a few hours? Yeah, I want something. Yeah, you know. And then, no, it's like we're a slave to the body. It's like an illness, you know. It's like AIDS, and it will kill you, right? Your stomach. Okay? So it says in order to the treatment, right? Meaning running around, working for food, working for rent. Okay, working for clothes, the treatment, in order to get it, we take birds and fish and other animals and we kill them. Okay? So in order to, because you're a slave to this body, you go out and kill animals to eat, you go out and kill them for their feathers, you go out and kill them for their skins, you know. You lay it in wait. It means like you just always, to an animal, we were in Scotland, and we wanted to make friends with the animals like we did in Arizona, and they didn't want to have anything to do with us. You know, like we walk out, we're the only people on this whole big lake, lot, right? And there's a duck like 50 yards away, and he says hi, and they just like running, you know, they don't swim, they just kind of paddle away, you know? And then we saw a deer, a stag, you know, and we're like picking berries in his area, and he's like, wah, wah, wah. And I thought it was a wolf, you know. And he said, "No, no, the stags in Scotland they do this scream. You know, it's a very frightening. It sounds like a monster or something." And they just weren't friendly. And then finally, we got to know them. Like it took a whole month. to get them to be friends, you know. And then we met local people, and they were like, "Well, what you doing, shotgun old man?" You know, and I'm like, "No, we found shotgun shells everywhere, and you know, they're used to getting shot at." And they had these nice dogs there, these beautiful dogs. They said, "Oh, my dog's sick. He won't run after the ducks anymore. You know, we shoot them, and then the dog swims out and gets it and brings it home." You know? And that's what they've been living in. You see, so they rightfully see humans as like muggers. You know, like we're hiding. We might be behind any tree with a shotgun, so they have to walk through the forest like this. You know, watching out for humans. You see, and that's our relationship. Why? Because we have changed our body. Because we take care of number one at the expense of other people's bodies. We were in the tree. We had cows came by. They had 5,000-acre desert. Okay, they put 200 cows on it. And they just let them go. Good luck. Hope you can find something to eat and drink. And then every 6 months they come and kill a couple of them. Just whoever happens to be there, you know. And that's cattle ranching. And if they get sick, they just die under a tree. We saw one die. And then one time this mother used to come with her two calves, her two babies. And we were in this big fence. We couldn't come out of the fence. But they would stick their nose under and we would feed them extra breakfast. Sorry, guys. Two of the cooks are here. No, they would get some Cheerios and stuff like that. They're really happy. And then one day they came and the two little babies had this special clip on their ear. Like they punched the ear and they put plastic tags through it. And it said terminate. It's a red fluorescent tag and it said terminate. You know? Then we sent a note out. You know, what does terminate mean? Does it mean what we think it means? They said, yeah. If you're born, all the calves are killed right away. Only a few of the female ones are kept. If you're a boy, you're out of luck. They kill you. It's this beautiful little, we're all used to them. We're all dear. Then, you know, like a week later, mom comes back. She comes back to the fence, and she bangs her head on the big post on the fence. And we're like, no, take some Cheerios. Be happy. It's all right. And she's like bashing her head on the fence, you know, because they took her babies, you know. And it was really sad. We had a chance to get close to them because we didn't speak for 3 years. So they trusted us. And then it was really sad, you know, but we do that. Why? Just because of stomach. Just because we're chained to the stomach, you see? So he says, look at all the trouble that being attached to your stomach gets you into. You see? It doesn't mean you shouldn't eat a nice meal. You should eat a nice meal. Have some nice, you know, oatmeal and Cheerios. That's what I have for breakfast. You know, it doesn't hurt you. It doesn't really hurt you at all. It's fine. You can be happy. And actually, you get more happy. All the foods that you get to hurting other beings make you sick. Okay? Like, the reason meat causes cholesterol and fat and gives you a heart attack, it's not that it's a coincidence. It's not just random. It's that the bad karma of all the killing expresses itself as cholesterol. Get it? Okay? And you can believe that or not, but it's true. Okay, the reason, you know, cholesterol and fat kill so many people, it's like the second or the first biggest killer of people in this country. It's not just that it's in there by accident, it's that it's there because you killed them to get it. You see what I mean? It's the killing that creates the cholesterol. Okay? Anyway, so he's talking about all the trouble you get into by taking care of yourself. Now, question that's on the homework, okay? We have this idea that grasping to a self is the source of all trouble, okay? So me grasping to Michael Roach is the source of all trouble. How is that different, or is it different, from me wanting to take care of Michael Roach? Is cherishing Michael Roach, is my habit to cherish me the same as my habit of grasping to me? Is it the same thing? What do you guys think? It's not the same thing. Okay, it's not the same thing. When you see a Buddhist book and it says, don't grasp to self, that's not the same as taking care of number one. And you have to know the difference. So I'm going to talk about the difference. Okay? Taking care of number one, cherishing yourself, is just doing things for me at the expense of others. You have to say at the expense of others. Is it wrong to eat breakfast? No. Is it wrong to like ice cream? No. Is it wrong to enjoy a meal? My boss, I gotta brag, we went there last night to the Trump Tower, you know? And we get out of the car and the guy's looking at us like, what are you doing here? We're like, we're seeing somebody here. Yeah, right. You know, and we're like, no, really. And he says, nah, who do you want to see, you know? And then finally we talked him into the, yeah, we're supposed to see somebody there, you know? This is my old diamond company boss, okay? Then he takes us out to this restaurant, isn't it? Danielle, okay? We get 20 courses. They're this big. I'm not kidding. And it's at his private table that he keeps, you know? That they never let anybody else sit there, you know? And I, God knows how much it costs. But yeah, he takes thing after thing after thing, you know, they give you. That's okay. If you earn the money, honestly, and you want to go waste your money like that, that's your right. That's not a bad thing for you. I mean, if you're interested in that, I'm not. We like dal and rice from the Indian store, you know. But no, but if they want to give you, if somebody earned their money honestly and they want to enjoy, enjoy. That's fine. There's no problem with that. That's a good thing. Okay? So, but Ram Chintan means at the expense of other people. So if it's been dishonest or hurt other people or kill them to eat that food, that's a different thing. That's a different thing. So it's okay. It's okay to treat yourself. It's not okay to cherish yourself. See the difference? Okay? Hurt others to take care of yourself. Now, how is that different from grasping to yourself? How is that different? How is cherishing yourself different from grasping to yourself? That's a different thing, okay? Grasping to yourself means misunderstanding Michael Roach. Okay? Grasping to Atma of Michael Roach means not understanding who Michael Roach is. Does Michael Roach exist? I think so. He's making you late. Okay? He affects you, so he exists. You see? You can't say I don't exist. I'm up here, I'm making you late. You're not going to get home on time. Probably. I don't know. Okay? I exist. Does his Atma exist? Himself. Yeah. Michael Roach himself exists. Yes. But is there a kind of himself that doesn't exist? Yes. Is there a kind of Michael Roach that you think exists that doesn't exist? Oh God, yes. What's that one? That's the source of every pain of every person in the world. Oh, well then tell me what it is. It's a Michael Roach that didn't come from your karma. Okay. You ready? We'll do an experiment. Everybody put their hand up. Okay, now point to the Michael Roach that didn't come from your karma. Emptiness. Emptiness. That's all emptiness means. All those long books written, confusing things by scholars in universities, you can stack them up and throw them out. Okay? That's it. That's all emptiness means. There ain't no Michael Roach in this room who didn't come from your karma. If you're late tonight, who can you blame? You. That's all. That's all. Now, let's talk about that. That's very important. That's very important. Are you going to get upset if Michael Roach keeps you late? Well, in theory, okay, in theory, you shouldn't. Because you made me make you late. Okay? It's not me. Okay? No, you made me. I'm a production of your karma. If you made other people late in the past, I'm going to keep you late. If you were punctual in the past, you'll get out of here at 8 o'clock. Okay? Don't blame me. Okay? Now, is that just so I can get out of keeping you late? No. It's to keep you from collecting new bank karma. You see? And it's to keep you happy. Can you prevent CRAP from happening? Not right now. Okay? Not right now. So you don't need to get mad at it. You don't need to get upset at it. You can't do anything about it now. It's too late to change me tonight, keeping you late. It's too late. It's too late. You don't have time to collect the 1,000 new karmic seeds between now and 8 o'clock. To make me not go late. It's too late. Those seeds are already in motion. So, Kelka, do you see Yunani? Yeah? Yeah, we have a beautiful song, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, the Dalai Lama always quotes from the same text. If you can do something about it, then do it. If you can't do anything about it, chill out. Okay, that's from Shantideva. That's from Master Shantideva. So, last question. Is misunderstanding Michael wrong? Or let's say you. If you're Christine, is misunderstanding yourself connected to grasping to yourself? Sorry, is misunderstanding yourself, which is grasping to yourself, connected to wanting to take care of only yourself? Yeah, obviously. Okay? So these two things are connected. They're both bad. Taking care of yourself at other people's expense is bad. Misunderstanding where you come from is bad. But they're connected, see? They're connected. If you understand where things are coming from, you're not going to have the cherishing thing. You're not going to hurt other people. Isn't it cool? You see? Avidya is the root. I don't understand things. But once you understand, you can cut off all the trouble. You won't take care of yourself anymore. Oh, get it? I'll say it again. If I understand that I can only get a cookie if I give them away, then I'll stop taking care of myself and eating all the cookies myself. There's a connection there. See what I mean? That's all. If I understand that my whole world is coming from giving away the cookies, then I'll stop worrying about number one. Or actually, I'll worry about number one on a higher level. I'll give away all the cookies I can so I can go to Danielle, to my private table, and get 20 courses of vegan, vegetarian. They're like, vegan? Vegetarian? And then two guys come up, you know, they serve you this thimble. Three guys. And they say, this is blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, and they say, is it cooked all right? And I'm like, oh, yeah. You know? Then I ask her afterwards, what was that, you know? Then, see, I think it's a french fry. Okay. Anyway, it's really cool. no joke. I think we'll take a break there. You're getting hungry, right? We'll take a break. Come back in 20 minutes. If you want to just say hi to Christy and me, we'll be sitting up here. All right. Okay, let's start. We have to read the next verse. I think it's 122. Who was he? Yeah, what are you open?
For it, for profit, and to win the honor others give us, we would even kill our parents, stealing also things belonging to the triple gems, passing on to burn for it in hells of endless torment.
This is just a depressing verse. I think we'll just go on. No, it means if you get into the habit of taking care of yourself too much and watching out for yourself, and not taking care of others, then obviously you're going to do small bad things like pick the last donut that we talked about at the yoga class, yeah? Like there's one donut left and other people like them and you just take the last one. That's because you're attached to your body, you're attached to yourself. But then there's much more serious things that you might do. One example is, I don't know, sometimes when you get in financial problems, right, you're thinking, oh, my parents are getting kind of old, like maybe they passed away or something, you know, maybe I can get some money right now, you know what I mean? It occurs to people, and then people fight about it. And your parents are an example of a heavy karma object. They gave you a body and mind with which you can reach enlightenment. So whether they were nice to you or not, whether you like them or not, whether they have bad habits or not, they gave you the means to reach enlightenment. If you're going to go the yoga way, they gave you that body, right? If you're going to go the meditation way, they gave you your mind. If you're going to use both, they gave you body and mind. Precious, priceless gift they have given you. So you have to honor them. Doesn't matter how nice they are, how they, you know, doesn't matter. You have to honor them. Okay? So the person who gave you your life, really, to have this little thought in the back of your mind of when they're going to die already, it's like the worst thing you can do. It's like a really terrible karma. So he's saying, even those kinds of serious karmas are caused by your stomach, attachment to your body, okay? Attachment to this meat. Then he gives another example of stealing from the three jewels. In practical terms, this means like you get into a situation where you're helping out at a Dharma center or something like that, and then you need money really bad, and there's like money floating around, and you like kind of, you know, you don't steal the money, right? You just kind of, maybe you exaggerate on the hours or something like that, or some you do something to direct money or stuff to yourself. And this is very careful. In the monastery, they teach us to be very careful. I went to my lama, Geshe Thupten Rinpoche, in the monastery, and he was my scripture teacher in the monastery, and really great teacher. And he said, I was late for class one day, and he said, why are you late? You know, no, you can't be late in the monastery. And he's like, why are you late? You know, and I said, well, he stuck me with this job. I do the accounting in the monastery. I hate it. And he stuck me with this job, you know, because I'm the only one who knows how to work this hand calculator. Now everybody does, better than me, but at the time, back in the 1920s or something. I was kind of upset, and I said, they stuck me with this job. And he said, oh, no, no, they give the best monk the accounting job. And I'm like, yeah, right, you know. And then he said, no, no, in Nalanda Monastery, way back, old times, they gave that job to Nagarjuna. Arnie Nagarjuna was the accountant, monastery. And I said, yeah, right. He said, no, I'm serious, he was. This is like we call the second Buddha. This is like the most famous of all teachers, 18 centuries ago. And I said, why did Nagarjuna get stuck with the accounting? And he said, because the karma of dealing with spiritual money is so dangerous, you see, that they only trusted Nagarjuna to deal with it, you see. So you have to be really careful, like if you work at a center or something, you have to be really careful about money. Not because it matters. The yogis don't need money. Whoever's your lama there, your guru there, your teacher there, they don't need money, they don't want money. But the money is powerful. The money is a very powerful karma. And you have to be very strict about it. You know, everything should be well accounted for. Then you need money and you kind of do something sneaky and you get the money, and that's very dangerous karma. He's saying that karma can be very dangerous. And again, it comes from your stomach. It's your rent, right? It's your, you know, food, something like that. So you have to be careful with that. Okay. That's a depressing. Let's go to the next one.
Yes, I do. What wise man could ever then desire this body, care for it, and make unto it offerings? Who is it that wouldn't see the body as the enemy, who then not disdain it?
He's wrapping up the self-cherishing thing, and he says, look, it's the stomach. He says body, I say stomach, okay? It's your stomach that gets you in trouble. So you should sort of have this schizophrenic relationship with your stomach. You know, like, okay, you know, you've got all these chakras and stuff, you can make me money. On the other hand, you keep whining all day for more food, then I have to go to your job, and then I have to do all this stuff. So in that sense, I don't like it. Okay? So you have to feel both ways about your stomach and the rest of your body. You're a big hassle, and I don't like whining all the time. On the other hand, we have all these sacred channels and all these prana and chakras. They're pretty cool. Okay? You have to have both feelings about this thing. They're both true. Okay, I like the next verse. One of my favorite verses. Really, you got to do it. Such a cool verse.
Thinking of yourself and saying, if I give, what will I have for me? It's nothing but the mind. I think of others and say, if I use this for myself, what will I give? Is it gone? Is it anger gone?
Prashna Karamati, this great Indian yogi who wrote the commentary, he says, this means, you know you get a paycheck, right? You get a paycheck. Or somebody gives you an envelope with some money in it, or something like that. Or somebody just hands you a plate of cookies, okay? Anything. The minute you touch it, the minute it is in your hands, you're faced with a choice. Bhogapamagartam. Ramana Yoga Sutra. What's that mean? You can either consume it or use it for your liberation. Right? So you have a choice. The minute you get some money, the minute you get some food, the minute you get some clothes, the minute you have an apartment, you're faced with a choice. Do I use it for myself or do I share it with others? The minute you get anything, the minute anybody hands you anything, you're faced with a choice. Do I use it for myself or do I use it? Do I give it to someone else? Share it or give it to someone else. Okay? Then he says, you want to know demon dharma, we call it demon dharma, devil's religion. Okay? It's but if I give it away, what will I have for me? Okay? That's like the devil's religion. If I got $100, I need it for the whole week. Somebody else needs money. Somebody important, something important. If I give it to them, it's a good thing, but what will I have for me? See? Then he says, that's the devil's thinking. Devil thinking. Okay? Like that. Then here's angel thinking, okay? Angel thinking. How's it going? If I eat it, what will I give away? And somebody gives you a cookie, right? And you got this choice. Then you gotta hesitate. Once you get into this practice, once you get good at this practice, you have to think, well, I could eat it, but then what am I gonna have to give to somebody? If people come up to talk to me, I gotta save this cookie. You know? Then I'll give to somebody that'll be happy, you see? But if you eat it, like everything stops there. It's a dead end, karmic dead end. Okay? And we wanna do this upward spiral, upward cycle. I'll get cookie, I'll give away. I'll get more cookies, I'll give them away. And then you get like this. If you eat it, it's a dead end. It turns into poopy. Okay. Dead end. There's a word here in Sanskrit where it says Vayucha in the Tibetan, which means Dharma of the angels, or Dha, Dharma of the angels. Okay. And in the Sanskrit, if you look, it says Deva Rajata. Okay, Deva Rajata. And I just picked this out just to give you. This is like an advertisement for people going to Dalai Lama. By the way, I wanted to remember to say, we just found out that the Dalai Lama, His Holiness, will be coming to Tucson next fall. Not this fall, next fall. 2005, right? And we got permission for the biggest block of tickets. Like, we already bought 200 tickets together. Okay? So, we just bought, like, a quarter of the tickets or something. And so come. You know? And guess what he's teaching? Teaching this chapter. So you're like loaded, you see? No, if you have it once from an amateur, and then a year later you get it from the horse's mouth, like, your mind is like prepared. Your mind is like fresh, you see? It'll cook in the next year, in your mind. And then, if you want a ticket, talk to Chitma, raise your hand. Okay, and no guarantee, I mean, if they go, they go. I guess face-to-face in the room. And that'll be in the middle of the first semester of Dalai Lama University next year. Alright, but that's just really cool. It's really exciting. We just found out. And they're very excited that we want a large group to go. The organizers are very happy. We're all very excited. Okay. And they said, Deva Rajita, oh, why did I get into that? It's interesting. It was just like America in the old days in Tibet, like 1,000 years ago in Tibet. There are these guys showing up from India, and they're teaching this new stuff, you see? And everybody's like, wow, that's cool, you know? And then they go to India, and they hear the same thing, and then they all come back. And then there's all these different versions of these books running around, you know? Like, if you go out and buy a Yoga Sutra book, and you try to read it, you say, that doesn't sound like what Geshe Michael taught us, you know? Then you buy it, no, you go buy another one, and you say, that doesn't sound like either one of those other books, you know? And this happened in Tibet. You know, 12 guys would go to India, 12 guys would get the Master Shantideva's teaching, 12 guys would come back, 12 guys would translate it, and it sounded completely different, you see? And then over the years, the best translations rose to the top. And the other translations just died out. And then there was a few periods in Tibetan history, 2 or 3 periods, where there was a Dharma king, like a great king, and he would hire like 100 best monks, and they would go through all the translations, and they would choose the best one. Or they would join a few good translations together. And then that became what we call Kangyur Tengyur. These are the holy books in Tibet, 4,500 books. And John Brady's not here tonight. He's being the priest at a wedding in California, okay? Chris Kelly, who's a very beautiful man. I think today or yesterday. So John is the guy, right? The priest. But anyway, so those are the books that he's saving. But what's interesting is Master Prajnakara Mati was using a different translation, or the Tibetan version of his book we have from a different translator. So sometimes they're not the same. And it's very interesting. So I mean, sometimes it's like having 2 Yoga Sutra translations. So we have 2 different ones. And we have 2 different versions of this book. See? Even in the center. So Deva Rajita, Master Prajnakara Mati takes it as the kingship of the gods. Kingship? Royalty of the gods. Royalty of the gods. Which is another way you can take it. Here it says what? Angel Dharma? But you can also read it as kingship of the gods. And then Master Prajnakara Mati says, if you learn to take care of other people, if you learn this thing about the minute you get a cookie, you say, if I eat it, will I have to give to my friend? You say, I can't eat this cookie. If I eat it myself, well, what am I going to do? You know, you know, so what am I going to do to him? I got to say it. I can't eat it. If you start to think like that, you are Devaraja. You see? Then you are the king of the gods. You become the king of the gods. In one way, it's saying you are a moral king of the gods. You see? You are a mensch. You know? Like, you're a real person. You're a Deva. You're a god. You are a king among men. Because you don't eat the cookie. You save it for the next person that comes. That you can give it to. The minute you get the cookie, you're like, who can I give this to? You know, I can look around the room, who can I give this to? You don't even think about your neighbor, you see? You meet people like that, okay? So he says, if you think like that, if you keep thinking like that, you're like a king of gods, king of kings. Okay? What's interesting is if you keep that up, what will happen to your karma? You will become the king of kings. Okay? That's an interesting thing. So there's an example where you see, it's nice to know the language that things were written in. You see, even the Bible, or Master Shantideva, or if you try to read Tsongkhapa or the Dalai Lamas, it's very, very useful to learn a little bit about how to read the original book. Why? Because like Sanskrit, one word will have 3 meanings. You see, Sanskrit's a very beautiful ancient language. It's the mother of all of our languages. It's the mother of every language in our Western world. It's the source. But every Sanskrit word has like 3 different meanings. But when you're translating, you're a Tibetan 1,000 years ago, you have to choose one. See, you can't put 3 different words there. You can't say king of the gods and angel Dharma. You can't do that. You have to choose one word. You see? Then forever after, people who read the Tibetan will never know the other 2 meanings. You see? So it's good to go back and learn how to read it if you can. in the original language. The best way to learn a language is not to sit there in a class on your bottom and try to memorize words. Okay? That's a start. That's a good start. Second step is start memorizing stuff, like verses, and sing it to yourself, like Lady Ruth was doing. It's very beautiful. It's more exciting. It's more comfortable. It's not a hassle. You get to sing with your friends. You know, make up songs for these things. We have some songs for these things. And the best way to learn stuff is to debate. The way we did the other night, Dibata! Yeah! You know, and then when I first went to the monastery, I'm like, you know, like that. And then they said, get up, do your debate thing. And I'm like, I haven't understood a single word for an hour and a half. You know, not a single word for an hour and a half. Because they're like screaming in Tibetan, it's going 90 miles an hour. You know? And I'm like, I can't get up. I don't know what to say. Get up. You know, and get up. You know, there's 1,000 people there. And like, Nyingbar, pal. You know, and the guy says, what? What'd you say? And excuse his accent, you know, he's a white guy. You know, and no, you know, I'm the only Westerner there. And, you know, they were very kind, and after like 4 years, I could understand a few things. And then, but you learn really fast. You learn really fast, you know. So we're going to do that in Arizona. You know, we'll do it in English, we'll do it in Tibetan, we'll do it in Sanskrit. Okay? But then it's just boom. And I have lots of students sitting here who are translating beautiful books. Beautiful books. Krishnadath just finished the first book of meditation ever written for Tibetans. It was lost. And we found it and we translated it. And we're going to use it for the course in September. See? And I don't know, like X years ago, she was like, Imba, Tom. You know? And you learn. You learn fast. You see? That's what Arizona's for. It's damned uncomfortable. There's no facilities. It's going to be too busy. We're totally unorganized. And if you really want to learn hard, then you could go. You know? Okay. If you really... We call it the natural filter. You know, 60% of the people won't come back. And then the people who stay will learn. Okay? And then they'll be great teachers. The thing is, we want to make great teachers. Like Orazal and Masudista, who did their course today. And yesterday at Three Jewels. That's how they learn. Okay? Alright, so anyway. So it's not that the Tibetans didn't translate well. They are perfect. Perfect translations. Once I took the Abhidhamma Kosha, it's 10 years to study this thing. I checked every word, and the Tibetans translated every word well. And there was one extra syllable in the whole book. One extra syllable in the whole book. You see? Like, amazing. They were amazing. But they just can't convey three different meanings in one word. So it's good to know as much as, it's good to learn as much as you can. So you can help other people. You see what I mean? Then you go someplace, like I went to Doubleday to sell them this Yoga Sutra translation, the new one, the third one, okay, the short one. And the guy said, we'll take it. And I said, why? And he said, because you base everything on authority. It's authentic. And then people will trust you more. You can teach more if it's authentic, you see? Okay. Next verse.
If I deprive others for myself, I will only be tormented in places like the hells. If I deprive myself for others, I will come to attain every excellent thing.
This is that old trick, you know. If I deprive myself of this cookie, right? Then I'll be really happy. If I deprive others to make myself happy, if I eat the cookie, then karmically it's a dead end. The cookie ends, the karma ends. If I take the cookie and reinvest it, it's just reinvesting. I did that in the business, okay? I did that in the business. I got X amount of dollars, I just put it. I went and gave it to some refugees. And then I got more money and I went and gave it to the refugees. And I started out at $7.50 an hour. Okay? And now that company is $250 million a year. It's more than the state of Arizona's economy. Got that? No, really. And I don't own it, and I gave away all the money. But you keep reinvesting your karma in the matrix. You see? No, I'm not kidding. Like you just keep sending it back into the matrix, and then it pops out again as something bigger. And then you send it, you reinvest it, you see? Every time you get something, you turn it over in the bank of humanity. Humanity bank. You see? You turn it back over. Just keep rolling it over. Turn it over. You see? And then it just keeps building and building and building. And it's unbelievable. It gets global after a while. It gets global after a while. You know, you start doing little stuff in the little Dharma Center in Howell, New Jersey? Like, wet, toxic waste, dumb capital of the world? You know? No. And people say, you're crazy, Michael. Don't go there. You gotta go to graduate school. No, no, I don't understand, you. You start out this stupid, ugly little place. You know, and the last place in the world you wanted to live. You know, I was from California. I wanted to surf in Del Mar. I had my apartment picked out. Right, Brian? Right. You know, and then he told me I got to go to the Armpit of the Nation to get my meekness. You know, and I went, and you start small, and then you keep reinvesting this good karma, you see. And then after a while, it's like unbelievable. This guy got a book from, it's the Polish translation of the Diamond Cutter. And the Vietnamese one's coming out. And, you know, I'm like, I never heard of these people, you know? And you keep reinvesting this good karma, and then it becomes like unbelievable joy that you can touch people everywhere, you see? It's really fun. It's really fun. So don't just dead-end stuff by using it. Turn it off. Reinvest it somewhere, okay? And then you get every good thing, he says. Okay, last first thing you actually get to go home almost on time. That's kind of weird. Maybe I can make some more questions. Okay, John, you can do it.
The desire to be better than others will bring me lower rebirth, lowness, and idiocy. But if I can move this same state of mind to others, I'll attain higher rebirth and honor as well.
This is this thing where you want to be better than other people. And you want people to know it. Like, it's not bad to want to be good at something. To strive for excellence is a good thing. But to think competitively, you know, I want to be good because I'll look better than somebody else, that's not a good thought, okay? The karma of that is that you come back, you don't come back as a human. After you die, if that's been the theme of your life, people should like me better than him. I should look better than her. I should make more money than them. Okay, like that. If that's been the theme in your life, then most people who live that way, after they die, they go to a bad place, like animal, birds, or something. Then he says loneness, and in the commentary it says loneness here means even if you're born as a human, you'll be like born very poor, or you physically you'll be very weak, or you'll be a very unattractive person like that, because you were competitive. You always wanted to be better than others. It's not wrong to want to be good. You should want to be beautiful. You should want to be wealthy. You should want to be strong. You should want to be smart. Because you can use it to help other people. That's good. But to think I want that because she's got it. You know? Or I want better than her. If that's your motivation, then it will slow you down. You'll fall. And that's the idea. In idiocy, the big deal here is even if you never say anything to anybody else, and even if you never hurt anybody else, just thinking it will make you stupid. Okay? Alright? Karma is physical. Karma is verbal. But main karma is thinking. So just thinking that you'd like everybody to love you and not like anyone else, and you'd like to be the prettiest, and nobody else should be should have any attention paid to them, like that, those thoughts, just thinking them destroys your IQ. Okay? Like you become forgetful, and then you can't remember things, or you can't do things, you can't figure out things, you can't have new ideas, you're not creative anymore. All of these things come from not wanting to share with other people. I want to have everything. I want to be the biggest. Okay? Then there's this thing where your IQ starts to drop. Not as creative as you used to be. You can't have good ideas anymore. Okay? The opposite of that, if you keep sharing, you'll have creative ideas all the time. Like new ideas all the time will come to you. It's very powerful. It's very beautiful. And the older you get, the faster you can memorize stuff and stuff like that. It's very weird. It's not normal at all. Okay, yeah, really. You can turn back the normal process. You can go the other way. You get smarter and more happy every year. Okay. And next verse.
No.
If I force others to do my bidding for things I want, I become a slave of the light. If rather I set myself to do the things that others want, I'll become a real master or such.
When you get to the monastery, you know, and I had already been through university, I already had a degree from Princeton, you know, I already was a presidential scholar, got a medallion from the White House. Then I go to the monastery, and they break your ego. The first few years, they just break you. You know? They take whatever you were, it don't come from nothing. I washed pots for 8 years. Okay? I washed pots for 8 years. You know? They just broke me. And it was a blessing, and I'm really grateful. You see? And if you want to be a big shot, then the karma of that is that you will fall. You see? And if all you want to do is just to serve others, I'm the core. People used to ask me, what do you do? I'd say, I wash pots. Then there's this immediate thing where they almost step away from you, you know? No, later I got in the diamond business, they were like, oh, hi, you know? And then, but when I was a pot washer, it was, oh, yeah? You know? And, you know, if you keep wanting to be somebody, then you'll be a nobody, you know? And then you have the honor to meet a holy lama, a great lama, like Kenyon was, and they break you, you know? But you'll have everything later that you could ever wish for, you see? But you give up and you surrender your heart to your teacher, and you help them in their holy way, and you don't think about what you are. And then the karma of that is that you have all these beautiful students who serve you all day long. And you know, the karma of that is to have all these beautiful students, you see. So to get that karma, you have to break your ego, break your pride. You have to surrender to a good teacher. So if you have a teacher, it's a great opportunity. You don't get that if you don't have a teacher. You see? If you don't have someone who can snatch you down, and it hurts. Like, I'm talking now like it was fun, right? It wasn't fun. It was very, very difficult. And I was very, it was very hard for me for many years. But if you don't have a teacher, you'll miss out on this, you see? You won't have a chance to get wrong. You see? And that leads to all good things. So try to find a teacher, try to find a good teacher that you can be near, someone that you trust, and then check it out carefully. Don't do it easily, don't do it irresponsibly. Do it carefully, take your time, but then make this relationship, and then surrender, and then break you. That's their job. They're not there to make you like more egotistical than you are already. Okay, they're there to break you, so that you can grow. Okay? So, gotta find that teacher, somebody close who can stick close, and then you have to stick around during the breaking. Okay, and it's hard. It's really hard, but there's nothing like it. Okay, I'll tell you afterwards. Right? Okay, next verse.
Thank you.
The total amount of happiness that exists in the world has come from wanting to make others happy. The total amount of suffering that exists in the world has come from wanting to make yourself happy.
As you can feel, this is the most famous verse in the book, maybe. This is one of the most famous verses in the book. Every kid who shows up in the monastery, they memorize this verse. I think you should learn it by heart, in English or whatever. Learn it by heart. Learn to say it as a prayer. Let's do it together, and then we'll stop for tonight, okay? Let's do it together. Let's do it in English, okay? 1, 2, 3. The total amount of happiness that exists in the world has come from wanting to make others happy. The total amount of suffering that exists in the world has come from wanting to make yourself happy. Good job, Bukhana. That was a dedication, okay. Have a good night. We'll see you on Friday. Friday at 6 p.m. here. Okay? See you then. Do your meditation. This class don't count for nothing. Okay? Every day, in the morning, hold this out, look at it, meditate on it. Okay? Then your heart will change. It won't change by itself. Okay? See you. Good night. Thank you for coming.